I will be talking about targeting multiple end uses in beef breeding programs.
Thank you. Well, you'll all know that Alison van Inenum is a dynamo by now. And I can tell you that she is to work with. She's very effective, and it's just a pleasure. So I thank her for those things. And I also thank Alison and the USDA grant that some of us are working on for giving me the opportunity to stand up here. Right. So this slide I'm going to use to give a concept of, I picked up the right thing here, yeah, of what I mean by multiple end uses. So this is a breeding operation, a stud or a nucleus, and what I'm talking about could be applied purely in the commercial scenario, but the scenarios that I'm going to be talking about are largely where you've got a breeding operation for genetic improvement. You know, I'm a foreigner in more than one way. I pretend to be an Australian, but I'm also a geneticist and not a reproductive biologist, so you'll get that background. So we've got selections and matings taking place in the nucleus to produce not just one but many young stock. And then an end use for animals that are produced is to potentially be selected back into the breeding program. And this is no use at all. It's pretty useless. So in this case, if the animal's culled, that's not a use. So this would be a single-use system. But here we are. As to the alternative fates of animals which are born into the nucleus, not only to be selected back in or culled, but to be sold off, and that's part of the where the money comes from, of course. So in this case, there are two different customers. One perhaps has got an objective to produce carcasses which are highly marbled, going for a certain type of market. And as we see quite often in Australia, and in fact this is inspired from working with the one particular Angus outfit in Australia, another set of customers where a less highly marbled product is looked for, so that you want to have bulls going in here which have got high EPDs for marbling, and here you're not interested in that at all. More topically, this might be a customer who is purely looking for terminal sires to produce to produce meat, essentially, whereas this is a cow-calf operation, and a lot of the pressure is for producing heifers. And that means that this customer here is going to be interested in EPDs for calving ease and heifer fertility, whereas this guy is not interested in that at all, because all of the slaughter stock from bulls that are bought, none of them are going to be bred from. So there you've got two different end uses. So, of course, we have a range of progeny born into the herd with a range of merit. And if we look at it in this way, you can conceive of this typically for a breeding operation that we're going to use the best in some scale, so dollar index scale, we're going to use the best at the head of the breeding program to target sustainable genetic gains, and the tail of the breeding program is largely going to be targeted at dissemination to customers and other uses. And the decisions that we're making are at mating time, selection and mating. So we might be targeting these things, as I'll describe in this talk, as we'll describe in this talk. But, of course, after mating, when these animals are born on the ground, then you can reassess that. So the fate of individuals are not as you would dictate them at mating stage. But what we can do is load the dice so that we're in a better position when we do have stock to reselect or to sell in order to determine their fate, or let our customers determine their fate. So how do we go about this, handling this issue of multiple end uses? Well, these are motivating factors which are important for animal breeders. I've put these two up here on their own because they are the two critical ones of making fast genetic gain and maintaining genetic diversity so that we can sustain that in the future. If we look at all the other issues, the issue of multiple end uses is just one of those. So what we need to be able to do is to integrate all this. We cannot just handle one thing at a time because in real operations we've got to address all those different issues. One way of one might approach this actually quite complex problem is to look at all the sets of rules that are associated with these different components, for example, how to avoid having high inbreeding in progeny. But then it becomes difficult for the producer, because if you have some kind of a decision system that does set up all these sets of rules, then it's typically up to the practitioner to turn those into actions, and actions are things like buying semen and making selections and cullings and so forth. What we need is a system which directly determines what the actions should be. So it tells you what selections and matings to make. We don't like a computer to tell us how to do those things. So this should involve the practitioner, the breeder, consultants, whatever, in driving this process, and you'll see how that is done just now. So we need to have a comprehensive system to drive our breeding programs if we want to take account of issues such as managing multiple end uses. So what you're going to see when I drive this, this is a key picture that comes out for those two important components of genetic merit. This is typically a multi-trait index, a dollar index. So what we're looking at here is the outcome in terms of genetic merit in progeny, averaged over progeny, as a function of the selections and matings that we're going to make. So the scenario is that we're at mating time. We could be at the time of having to start making decisions on semen purchase earlier in the process, or we could even be further down the track making decisions on backup matings, but because you can use this approach at multiple stages. But let's think it's the main round matings in order to get high genetic merit, but also to have inbreeding rate reduced. This is over here, high diversity. This is low diversity. And what we have is a frontier of possible outcomes that we can in relation to these two things. So the current solution, which is represented by a mating list, tells, and you'll see this happening, sitting up here. If we were to look up here, we would be going for the maximum possible genetic gain, which if we had all the reproductive technologies, would be just the best bull, the best cow, and would produce the whole mating set from that alone, but in disastrous consequences down the track with respect to inbreeding. Over here, we could be very conservative, have many bulls selected out of many families, and not make much genetic gain. There's a balance to be sought, and this line actually shows us how far out we can go in any one direction. So let me just move the microphone over here just a moment and drive this software. Okay, is that reasonably on the screen? I think it is. So let me just open a file here. So this is a file which contains all the animals and their EPDs and the pedigree. And what the program starts off by doing is called MateCell. There are a family of programs like this, or three of them actually. The first one I developed in the 1990s, and then PIC, the Pig Improvement Company, is using something in between. And this is the latest incarnation. And let me just pause that. And it's now used in all the main species, dairy, beef, sheep, meat, poultry, eggs, also aquaculture and trees. So it's beginning to get quite wide use. So here we are. The solution is settled here. Let's just illustrate what that looks like. That solution is represented by saying mate this bull with this cow, and it gives a little bit of information about what the outcome is. And if I look at only just the sires that are used, this is a list of the sires that are used in the mating set. So let's get a bit more aggressive and see if we can get as much possible genetic gain out of this. And we describe this in terms of degrees, as was actually on that previous slide. I put in 0 degrees, and that means that I want to go up to this place here. This would be 10, 20, 30, all the way down to 90. So if I update the mating list and have a look, you can see that we're only using 2 bulls in order to get this very high genetic merit. We're using 2 because it's natural mating in this scenario, and 1 won't cover the whole herd. If we then go and look at what happens if we go very conservative, what you're seeing is, in actual fact, a genetic algorithm. It's breeding a good solution to the problem. It's a very complex problem, this, and evolutionary and genetic algorithms are well suited to solving them. So now let's look at what happens with that. Here we're using far more SARS. As you can imagine, we're digging into the barrel, not getting so much genetic merit. If I sort this on the number of uses, so the number of matings, so this bull is getting six matings and all these are getting one. If I look at the co-ancestry or relationship of these bulls to the rest of the population, you'll see that this one here has got the lowest figure. So even although we're going for maximum diversity, we're not using the bulls equally. We're actually using those which are less related to the population more, because they're more new blood, so to speak. Now, that's not a sensible place to be in beef especially, because we're not breeding for diversity, we're breeding for a balance of these things. And that is a more sensible sort of place to be up here. Okay, let's have a look now at one more issue, which relates to multiple end uses. These are the distributions of merit in progeny that is expected or predicted to occur if you were to make the matings that are shown here. This is intramuscular fat. Let's look at that scenario of high and low fat. So what I can do is request to go for, I can manipulate that distribution in many ways, but I'm going to go for bimodality. So I'm going to have a peak around here and a peak around here, something like that, and then I shall resume. And you see what happens is that we get the bimodality we're looking for. We're getting some animals of higher intramuscular fat, some of lower intramuscular fat, and we're beginning to pull away from this frontier here, which means that there are other issues involved, which means we're compromising on the best combinations of genetic gain and co-ancestry. And what we can do is say, well, we'll go a little bit softer on this issue. I'll just pull that down a bit in terms of how hard I'm pressing it, and in that way, I'll get close up here to my frontier, have relatively low compromise on the main game, and still have a reasonable amount of bimodality. Okay. Now, I was going to stop there, but Dave Patterson suggested that they should actually just include a little bit of stuff which is more of some relevance to the overall conference here on reproductive technologies. First of all, if we were to include in the scenario for this use of ET and IVF, which some people are using, then what happens is this frontier basically comes out much further. Let me show another way of constraining these things, which might help with this. So if we can actually constrain so that you can not have any more inbreeding than a certain line here. So what would happen with multiple ovulation embryo transfer is that this frontier would actually be up here, much higher, and you would get more opportunity for genetic gain, as you would expect. But in actual fact, interestingly, we get more opportunity for genetic diversity. And so at the same level of genetic diversity, which is a real issue when we start to implement some of these reproductive boosting techniques, we can maintain the same level of genetic diversity and increase up to where my mouse is here and get the extra genetic gain. So I just point that out, that some people are using this for those things. Now I'll just make sure that that's stopped. There's one other data set which I'll bring in here. Okay, so what's going on here? We're just loading this data set. Now, Alison will describe this data set after me. This is an Angus data set into which we've simulated a number of genetic markers. And this is for the projects which Alison will describe, where we are looking for multiple recessive lethals so that we can actually aim to manage these in order to reduce embryo mortality. So this data set has got 100 loci simulated into it with moderately high levels in natural fact of these lethals for the purposes of working out what's going on here. So this so-called trait down here, in actual fact, is a conglomerate of all these different lethals into one representation. I'll just blow that up. And this actually shows us, for the current solution, the extent of embryo mortality. And further to the right here is a higher probability of embryo mortality. So these progeny here have got quite a high probability of not even coming out because they're going to be dead. So what we can do is take this and aim to decrease the mean. And I'll put a very high weighting in that so that essentially swamps all other issues. And you'll see as it looks for a good solution, it is managing to reduce that. It's just changed the scale just now. That's why that one moved over there. It's managing to get, and I think it will actually achieve, a situation where we have no mating of carriers amongst all those 100 loci, and the probability of having embryo mortality from them actually reduced to zero. It hasn't quite got there, but in time it will. We're quite excited about this because it does mean that if the technical side of the project is successful in coming up with a good number of candidates as recessive lethals, that we'll be able to manage these down to increase fertility in females because of reducing embryo mortality. And that will be largely because of mate allocation in order to avoid that. So if we actually make that only, and it didn't quite get to zero, but it would eventually. We will, if we had time, this will actually achieve a position near the frontier and give us, in actual fact, a much lower level of embryo mortality in this rather extreme example where we've made very high levels of embryo mortality in the first place. So that's just another illustration of handling many different issues. We've got to handle them all. If I can find my way back to my PowerPoint. There we go. So that was a demonstration of that, and that software is also running on the web now. But what I want to do is just look at how we'll use this in the current scenario of looking at terminal and maternal end uses, as Alison will describe. So what we have for that software, that one of the input files is called enduses.txt. Here we have three end uses. That's represented by three different economic indices, one which is for the nucleus, one which is for the terminal index, and one for the maternal index. So for traits like calving ease probably heifer fertility here, we've got zero weightings for the terminal index because they're not important, and that way we can differentiate between the terminal and the maternal. The number of matings are specified as required for each of these end uses, so there's 75 matings targeting return to the nucleus, 25 matings targeting the terminal, sale to terminal customers, and 25 matings targeting sale to maternal customers. And finally, there is a weighting value put on here, an overall weighting, where we reduce the importance of some end uses, in this case the terminal and maternal, and that ensures that the nucleus gets its pick of the best stock, so you have ongoing genetic gain. And when we do that in the program, then each mating is allocated to an end use, and you can see there's an extra column is added in here, and then we can go and look and see the performance of those matings for those end uses and deduce some kind of conclusion about the usefulness of that. And so with that, I'd like to hand over to Alison, who's going to present some of the method and the data for that part of the project. Thank you, Alison.